lyrics are.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I was able to sit down with Mr. Andrew Wilson from Silent 7 Games, a small publisher, does a lot of PDF products. He had some interesting perspectives on a bit of basically what's going on in the industry and PDF publishing. So sit back and enjoy.
This podcast is brought to you by FRP Games, an online retailer specializing in all kinds of gaming products. Please visit www.vorpalnetwork.com in order to gain access to thousands of unique items available only at FRP Games. This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I have the pleasure of sitting here with Mr. Andrew Wilson, a listener of the Gamers Haven, and also the owner-operator of Silent 7 Games. How are you doing tonight, Andrew?
Pretty good. Excited to be here.
Now, you've made a few appearances on other shows. I think you've been over on fellow Vorpal Network show, the Tome Show, a few times now.
Well, just once, yeah. We talked about doing like level appropriate encounters and building stuff like that, and we built a drow druid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and other than that, I have one of the intro clips at the Icosahedrophilia.
Icosahedrophilia, yep. Another member of the Vorpal Network at this point.
Right. Yep.
Cool. So I gather you're fairly big and fairly happy with 4th edition D&D then.
Yeah, I mean, yes. When I started playing pretty late in the game in 3.5, mm-hmm. So I never really, I mean, I kind of got into it, but never really felt like I was able to express my writing, and I did create something toward the end that I kind of released as a like a fan PDF on one of the pages. But when 4th edition came out, I thought, well, this is really my chance to get started with everyone else and learn the rules and the, you know, the game at the same time as everyone else does.
Sure, sure. Well, let's sort of go back a little bit. How'd you first get into gaming in general?
In general? Yeah. I guess the very beginning would be the Pokemon card game. Right. So, yeah, in middle school, I had some friends who played that, and then that led me to Magic the Gathering, which brought me to a game store, which brought me to being introduced to Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm. So you're a fairly new recruit to the gaming thing than being into 3rd edition D&D, right?
Yeah.
Fairly new at this point being, you know, when is it that you got into gaming? Around 2011, 2000, 2002, something like that? Or a little later than that?
Well, I mean, even when I first found out about D&D, I didn't play it as much. I probably just started playing 3.5 within the last 5 years or so, other than maybe a couple of sessions. Like one-off sessions mm-hmm. over the years.
Sure.
So, yeah, I certainly didn't start off with the original Red Box or anything.
Oh, well, neither did I. So, I didn't play D&D pretty much at all until 3rd edition came out, so I can feel you on that one at least.
One of my friends had played a lot of... I think he played 2nd edition, 3rd edition from when he was young. Uh-huh. But we didn't become friends until after he had kind of grown out of his D&D phase, and we kind of got back into it mm-hmm. together. But yeah, he had played a long time before, whereas it was pretty much new for me.
Cool. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about Silent 77, or there I go again, Silent yeah. 7 Games, because the 7 is silent, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit how Silent 7 came about?
Sure. Like I said, when 4th edition came out, I said, well, hey, this is my chance to learn the game with everyone else, and I already had ideas. I think everyone has ideas. Mm-hmm. I have the schooling to, and... kind of background to be able to do some graphic design and mm-hmm. and create my own PDFs, and I'm not the greatest. I'm not a good artist, but I'm not the worst artist either. So I can make everything. Basically, I can do the website. I can do it all. So, and it's fun for me. So it's kind of just like a hobby. I'm gonna make my stuff like everyone else does, but then I'm gonna go a few steps further and do some playtesting and some graphic design, and then I can sell it. mm-hmm. So,
well, what does Silent 7 do right now? I mean, you guys have a few things out currently, and obviously you guys do PDF products, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay. I haven't worked actually on much for Silent 7 in a while. Like I said, it's kind of just like a hobby.
Sure.
And I've actually been spending my time more recently creating a card game. So, and also my campaigns have kind of fallen to the wayside due to just schedules and player issues. So
real life, yeah.
real life. So the less you play, the less ideas
sure.
come to mind of stuff to write. So right, what I've been doing right now is nothing for Silent 7. But I mean, I still have plans to finish the Rune Soldier, which is available at has been for a while as a free heroic tier playtest. Mm-hmm. Levels 1 through 10. I think a lot of people have enjoyed that. So that's something I'd like to finish. But
cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking around on your website right now, and you guys have Huckstrapy, Rugged Adventures, the Advanced Class Sorcerer stuff, and then obviously the Rune Soldier. Now, it looks like all this stuff is for 4th edition, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you've just being a PDF publisher, how was the process of getting stuff out the door through, I'm assuming, like through RPG Now or through Drive-Thru RPG and stuff like that? How can you sort of take us through that process?
Well, sure. Like I said, anyone, you know, you write your own stuff. So basically, I started at that point. But then just you go through and I template everything so that it looks kind of official and mm-hmm. and nice looking. Go ahead and do a layout in Adobe InDesign. Do the graphics designed in Photoshop and create some artwork. Mm-hmm. Put all that stuff together and you've got a PDF. At that point, it was pretty easy to sign up as a publisher at One Bookshelf, which is DriveThruRPG and RPG Now. Mm-hmm. Basically, I think I just emailed him and said, I want to be a publisher. And he said, okay, here's some files, or, you know, here's how to upload. And then you upload, and stuff shows up, and people can buy it. So, yeah, it's not too difficult. I mean, at one point, I like automated stuff. Mm-hmm. I like to be able to just go through the computer without having to talk to people, because when the computer does it, it happens immediately. Sure. It's very easy, unless there's some kind of problem with the software. But so I was a little bit wary about having to email this guy to sign up for One Bookshelf, whereas like on a forum, you just click sign up and everything right. happens automatically. But that was like the only step that was hard for me was having to talk to somebody, and it turned out not to be that scary, and sure. it was pretty simple process. So
do you find getting a finished product out the door is kind of difficult, or do you sort of nitpick at it for a while until it's actually to your satisfaction?
The hardest part for me is writing it. Mm-hmm. Usually I'll have a basic idea and then I'll write my idea and then have more ideas to fill up the book and not really have all of the motivation there to finish writing. And I think that is the main thing. Once I get everything written, I'm like, hey, it's written. All I have to do is the not necessarily easy stuff, but not as... The creative stuff tends to be harder, and doing like a graphic design is creative, but not to the same degree as writing it. So mm-hmm. once I manage to get something written, putting the rest of the PDF together is not usually a roadblock for me. Once I'll be motivated by the finished manuscript and say, hey, look, all I have to do is this final stuff, and I can put this up on the website. So usually what keeps me is just working my way through the writing process.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you start with when you sit down to actually write something out, especially now since you're also working on a card game? What kind of differences have you noticed in that?
Well, if I'm writing something for D&D, I'll start with Notepad. I think actually everything I start starts in Notepad.
Oh, yeah?
basically just type out some ideas, maybe an outline, some key points, make sure I don't forget the key ideas mm-hmm. of whatever it is I'm writing. And from there, I might actually start writing a little bit of the text. Mm-hmm. But usually once I have like my outline, and it's usually very messy, not like a nice looking outline that you would print out and hand into a teacher when you're in school or anything like that.
Sure.
Just a mess, a conglomeration of ideas.
Like a stream of consciousness thing, basically.
Exactly. And then I have to look through and figure out what I was writing, but...
Yeah.
But...
Decode it yourself. Yeah, like,
and, yeah, decode it.
About? Oh, okay.
So, exactly. So, yeah, everything starts in Notepad. I have the same thing for my card game. Mm-hmm. I have a Notepad file. I just opened this Notepad for my card game. I've got like card types, and I listed my card types and my basic idea. Usually when I go back and read through my Notepad, I'm like, hey, I've changed that a lot since your initial
brainstorm of it, right?
Exactly. So I have a brainstorm, and usually from the brainstorm I'll just jump straight into the full process. Mm-hmm. Like Like for writing a D&D book, I'd do a brainstorming in Notepad, mm-hmm. and then I'll jump to Adobe InDesign and start typing it up and doing the layout all at once.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the process there.
And you do everything yourself then?
Yeah. Yeah, that keeps costs down.
I'm sure it does.
That way I can actually afford to make products, because I'm sure you've heard people say going into game design is not mm-hmm. the most lucrative business, and I'm sure it's better if you have more products and more customers than I do, mm-hmm. but I certainly am not rolling in dough.
Sure.
I couldn't afford, if I bought a piece of artwork for any one of my products, I'd be negative money.
Yes.
So, yeah. Well, actually, I did some of the, there is our publisher resources on One Bookshelf,
mm-hmm.
and I have bought some of those, and those, you can buy a packet of artwork or something for like $5, and I actually did use that in Rugged Adventures,
mm-hmm.
so, but I mean, like commissioning a new piece of artwork.
Yeah, that's usually a pricey thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're over here at Gamers Haven. We're actually toying around with an idea. Actually, I have several different ideas right now as far as some games and whatnot. So, I mean, it's a... I'm always curious as to see where people start. Because I find that's usually the hardest thing. You know, it's like, okay, well, I have this idea. All right, now what do I do?
Right. And that's kind of, I think, why I was able to go all the way through, is I'm pretty proud of my writing and my designs.
Mm-hmm.
And my artwork doesn't embarrass me too much. And if I had to pay someone else to do any of those things, it just wouldn't have been feasible.
Right. All right. Well, what are you currently playing right now, if anything? You said you sort of fallen off of the your regular group and whatnot right now. So, what was the last time you really got to play anything?
Well, I actually played through the first season of D&D Encounters.
Oh, cool! I haven't actually done any of those yet. How are those? Are
they
good?
I mean, it was only for a little while, and I didn't know any of the people there.
Uh huh.
So I actually played the Drow Druid from the Tome episode.
Oh yeah,
that we created.
Nice.
So that was good. I half hoped that someone would have listened to it and said, "Hey, you're playing that character," and I'd have been like, "I sure am." In fact, but no, I played. It was. I mean, the encounters were fine. I did miss a few weeks here and there, but I think it was. D&D is more about being with your friends, and I didn't really know any of them, and mm-hmm. I didn't have anything against any of them either, but I haven't gone back for the second season, so.
Sure.
So I'm actually hoping to find a podcast where they record playing through the second season, because I enjoy listening to podcasts of people playing Dungeons & Dragons, but I do have a kind of irregular game with mm-hmm. some people from work, and I don't think we've played. I think it's probably been a couple months since we've played, but we're looking to play this Saturday, so there's that. And I've been playing Magic, and working on my new card game.
Excellent. Well, let's look at back to the Silent Seven stuff. Let's just do the quick rundown. I think the first thing I heard that you brought to our attention, obviously, was Huckstrapy.
Okay, yeah.
Could you tell our listeners a bit about what Huckstrapy is?
Okay, well, I mean, I kind of did, I think I did my own podcast, kind of just me talking about it, and I forget some of the details, so if anyone's listened to that, it could be redundant, so beware. But,
podcast kind redundant? Of, that never happens.
That never happened. The first kind of idea was, I think I was just talking with one of my friends during one of our games, kind of downtime, get up to get drinks or whatever, and we're like, hey, blah, 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 using cards instead of dice, blah, blah. And I thought, hey, I could do that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, I mean, I could come up with something where you do that. So that was the initial idea, was, can you use a deck of cards instead of dice? And that was where I started. I want to make that happen. So Huckstrapy is I mean, I built a whole bunch of stuff around it about the elemental gamblers and the gambling gypsies and stuff like that. But there are a few player options. There's like a warlock pact, an alternate version of the ranger, and some feats and weapons. Basically, the core of it comes down to this weapon, which is the Huckstrippy deck. The Huckstrippy deck of cards. And you roll attack rolls like normal, but instead of damage dice, you have a deck of playing cards, and the book will tell you how to resolve those cards. But for the most part, whatever the number value of the card is, that's how much damage you deal. So it's kind of like a D10 with some face cards thrown in, which have different effects.
Different effects. Oh, cool. Excellent.
Yeah, so then if you get, like, spades, the damage is necrotic. If the card is... if it's clubs, it's cold damage. So that's kind of where the elemental aspect, it grew from that.
Very cool. And this is, of course, available on One Bookshelf, RPG Now, DriveThru RPG, all those places.
Yep.
Excellent. Sort of a look at what you're working on currently, or what you've got, at least in the future products. You mentioned Rune Soldier. What is Rune Soldier?
Well, the Rune Soldier is kind of a defender class, but I'm not sure where to start describing the Rune Soldier. You get runes, and there are six runes. Each of them is in a pair, and you choose one from each pair. So you can choose the Rune of Frost or the Rune of Inferno. Mm-hmm. You can choose the Rune of Vigor or the Rune of Decay, and you can choose the Rune of Mystery or the Rune of Telekinesis. So each Rune Soldier will have a suite of three runes that determine to what powers he or she has access. Mm-hmm. And they're also class features, each of these runes is. And basically, you use your powers, and when you hit with your rune strike power, or miss actually, you draw one of these runes on your target. And the runes have different effect, and each... let's see. If you, like, draw the Rune of Decay on somebody, they're going to be... they're going to be kind of weakened. Not weakened as in the D&D term, but their fortitude defense is lowered, I think, is the effect on that. So each of these runes has a unique effect, and some of the powers might say, well, you can only attack someone who has the Rune of Decay on them with this power, or something like that. So the runes interplay with the powers and determine the flavor of the powers that you can choose. And so in that way, each Rune Soldier is going to be kind of a different, like, you might be like, well, my rune is Frost, Vigor, and Mystery. And then someone else says, well, that Rune Soldier is going to play very differently from the Rune Soldier who has the runes of Inferno, Decay, and Telekinesis. Mm-hmm. So you've got your elemental runes, the astral runes, and the psychic runes. See, I can actually... Some of this is kind of blurry for me, and this is all, but let's pull this up and see. Let's see, just as example, there's the Glyph of the Glacier is the feature that gives you the Rune of Frost, and it has the runic ability score Constitution. And the runic ability score is determined by your elemental rune, either Glacier or either Rune of Frost or Rune of Inferno. And like the Rune of Inferno is associated with charisma. And that will determine your class's primary attack score. So there's a huge difference already just between your initial choice of Frost or Inferno. Then that choice will also determine your armor proficiencies, your bonuses to defense, and your additional class skills. And then the kind of descriptor text says, you gain access to the Rune of Frost, which channels the elemental power of cold. Use it in the powers associated with it to slow and immobilize your foes while punishing them with cold damage for breaking the rules you set down in blocks of chiseled ice. In addition, use the preternatural density of elemental hoarfrost to boost your armor and resist damage. So it's kind of a basic description. And while it's if you attack with Runestrike and draw this rune on your enemy at the beginning of each of its turns, the rune creature must make a saving throw or become immobilized until the beginning of its next turn or until the rune of frost is removed, whichever comes first. And as a move action that provokes opportunity, the runed creature can remove the rune of frost. So the runes are a little more complicated than maybe normal classes in tracking. You have three runes, and each of them can be drawn on different creatures. So you have to track where each rune is, and then the rune of frost is kind of more complicated than the other ones. The rune of Inferno is ongoing 2 fire damage, so save ends and the rune falls off when they save. But anyway, that's the rune soldier. Is you pick 3 runes, and you're kind of a defender, but based on the runes and powers you choose.
And it's currently a playtest right now on your site.
Yeah, a long time ago, One Bad Egg came out with the Witch Doctor.
Uh-huh.
And they had a level 1 through 10 playtest of the Witch Doctor, and I thought, hey, maybe that works. And I had written up the heroic tier and really wanted it to get out there for people to start playing. So it's free, and you can play it, and I have gotten very few playtest-related responses.
Sure.
Which is what I was hoping for, but... I'll just assume that means people think it's perfectly balanced.
Oh, of course.
So, I mean, I have gotten a few responses saying, hey, a lot of classes I don't like, but I think the Rune Soldier seems really cool and mostly balanced, so good job. So that's a little bit of a
compliment, yeah.
Yeah, a compliment. So, yeah, right now it's playtest, and I'm sure some things would get changed, but based on the reactions I've gotten so far, probably not too much and I intend to eventually finish and release the full three tiers, along with obviously items and feats and whatnot.
Cool. Well, we definitely look forward to that. Now the wrapping things up here in a minute. One thing Gamershaven, as you know, is all about is sort of spreading the love of how, you know, awesome tabletop gaming is and all that crazy stuff. I'm curious, as coming from you as obviously an online publisher and as a fan and as a listener, what makes gaming so special to you? I mean, why is it that you keep picking up the dice and coming back to the gaming table?
I love games. I don't know. I mean, that sounds vague, but I love the rules of games. I like reading. I like the way, like when you buy D&D, you get like a book, like the player's handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you kind of need all three books, or maybe just, you know, you kind of need all three books, but the experience of Dungeons & Dragons is so much bigger than those books.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say the same thing about, like, a video game cartridge. But there's so much... There's, like, 3D graphics everywhere inside there, and it's just... It doesn't feel the same. I love the way games like Dungeons & Dragons or Magic look so small. Like, a deck of cards is just, like, a stack of cards. And the D&D book is just... you know, a book.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start reading through it, you start realizing this huge potential. And the way the rules can shape that potential and that experience is what I love about games.
Cool. Excellent. Well, I want to thank you, Andrew, for taking the time out to talk to us today on Gamers Haven. It's always nice to get a perspective of a small-time publisher and to see how you know, basically their viewpoint on the gaming world is. And so thanks for coming on the show, you know.
Yep, thanks for having me.
There will always be people trapped in intolerable situations. There will always be people who have to hide what they are for fear of persecution. There will always be attempts to suppress a minority. There will always be people in power who are corrupt. There will always be megalomaniacs who want to take control of everything. And the people thought least likely to speak out, least likely to make a difference, always will. The Vajra Enterprises Fiction Podcast, updated every other weekend with stories from the worlds of Vajra Enterprises games, including The Dark and Dangerous City of Fates Worse Than Death, The Magical and Mysterious Tibet, The Cosmological and Ontological Horror of In Dark Alleys, The Post-Apocalyptic Savagery of Kid World, and The Haunted Past of Hoodoo Blues. www.indarkalleys.com.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.